Hey, folks, here's what I ordered from Amazon.com this week. I bought a USB sound card and a headphones amplifier for Kimberly's new podcast studio. I bought a WKRP in Cincinnati t-shirt. And I bought an Aquaman collectible statue because I'm a great big nerd. Point being, Amazon has everything and so can you when you go shopping through our Amazon link at bobseska.com. Just click the all caps Amazon link just beneath the logo and you're all set. Using our link will take you to the front page of Amazon where you shop as normal, but because you used our link, we receive a small commission on some of your purchases. Thank you for shopping through our Amazon link, and now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Pedro, just listen to your heart. That's what I do.
I'll just tell them that I have nothing to say. Hello? I don't have much to say. But I think it would be good to have some holy santos brought to the high school to guard the hallway and to bring us good luck. We have a great FFA schedule lined up, and I'd like to see more of that. If you vote for me, all of your wildest dreams will come true.
Bob Seska!
We could not talk or talk forever and still find things to not talk about.
The Bob Seska Show!
From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, April 23, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. It is the greatest soap ever. Hello, my name is Bob. What's happening? What's up?
Hello, Bob.
Hi, Rachel. It's day 824 of the Trump crisis, 560 days until the 2020 presidential election, and roughly 3 days until Joe Biden's next major gaffe. So mark your calendars. And oh, by the way, Pedro meant to add at the end of his speech, I don't think impeachment is on the table. We have to wait for 2020. I'm just saying. I don't know if Pedro's on board with impeachment yet. Oh, look, sitting right over there. Guy who's on board with impeachment. Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody. It's great to be back.
Hi.
Yeah, you know, it's true. Bob and I couldn't decide whether to do a show today or have a series of investigative hearings first. The moderates in the audience wanted us to do the show earlier or later today. The progressives wanted us to do the show earlier today. Yeah. Who knew doing our jobs could be so hard?
I know it is. It's a tough gig. It's a tough gig actually fulfilling constitutional oaths and mandates and duties like that, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm sorry, I don't have much in the way of opening jokes today, so I'll try to make it up during the show.
Okay. Thank God for that. All right. Well, you know, this is the first time we've had a conversation since the Mueller report dropped last week. I have been pouring over all of the details, this endless, this 400-page horror show that
so
is the
much.
Mueller report. So what, when you got the Mueller report, when you saw the news coming down from the, you know, all of the myriad details that just show a horrendously corrupt president and a horrendously incompetent president and a horrendously incompetent White House. If you were to choose like one major takeaway from this whole thing, what would it be?
Oh, I didn't read it. I why would I read it? I learned everything I needed to know from William Barr's delightful summary.
That's true.
Why would I there's so much, and I want to thank you, by the way, for your help last week with the with my special report.
Oh,
you
know, yes, that's
weird,
right.
Weird timing with my newscast and everything. Yep. I was able to do a special report. We've got some very kind words about it and a lot of attention to it, kind of summarizing the Mueller report in our own way, not in that William Barr way. and I thought it went pretty well. So thank you very, very much for that. And my impression is there's so much to talk about here. I mean, we could spend an hour talking about impeachment, which is really the big sort of topic of the day.
Yes,
you know, in the news. But for the Mueller report, it confirmed much of what we knew. It didn't address some things we thought it would. Now we understand why it didn't. We're understanding more about that, and I still am hoping that time will reveal Robert Mueller to be, and I believe that time will reveal Robert Mueller to be a faithful servant of this country and a patriot, and a guy, a straight shooter who did his job correctly. There are reasons he didn't do certain things that a lot of us were kind of hoping he would do.
I know.
And maybe that's on us, or probably is on us, for pinning too much hope on him. My impressions were that it confirmed much of what we knew, and the evidence is damning.
Yeah.
It's no longer the best thing about it, I think, for me, is the part about the fake news, the fact that Mueller was able to find instance after instance in which Trump claimed fake news, only to be proven now to be lying. It's no longer a question of opinion. It's been investigated, and the conclusion is Trump was lying about the fake news.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that gets, clearly that doesn't get through to the people it needs to, but it has been acknowledged. It has been proven.
Yeah.
And I appreciate those aspects of it very much. What were your takeaways? I'm sure you'll do a better job. I wasn't expecting that question because there is I know it seems obvious, but there is so much.
Yes, there's so
there
much.
There is so much to that. Yeah, it, both these topics, impeachment and the Mueller report, are large lakes that are deep and wide, and in the case of impeachment, also muddied.
Yeah,
which I'm sure we'll come back to, but. What's your takeaway, or main takeaway, I guess, from the Mueller report?
Well, I got to say, your takeaway is actually pretty appropriate, that there's too much in there. There's so many things that we need to wrap our heads around. And this is something I've been talking about since the beginning, that the complexity of this story, and we don't even have the counterintelligence prong yet. I think that's been made perfectly clear by the Mueller report.
Or the financial prong of it. And both of those are being investigated separately, as Mueller believed it was proper to do. He didn't think it was proper for him to handle some of this stuff.
That's right.
And in the case of the counterintelligence stuff, he handed that off to the FBI, which to this moment, as we speak, continues its investigation of Russian interference. The FBI won't say if that investigation involves Trump, but don't you kind of think it does?
Oh, God, yes. But here's the thing, and this is the thing that that I keep focusing on, and I mentioned this, I think, on the Friday after party, as we were talking with Kimberly Johnson about all of this, and the fact is that the thing that's staring us right in the face that I think we tend to miss is the fact that, Robert Mueller has once again, through his exhaustive investigation, confirmed that Russia attacked our election. In fact, they used the term in the Mueller report, in quotes, information warfare. This was an act of war. In fact, Senator Blumenthal was on MSNBC last night, referred to this once again as an act of war. And whether we like it or not, whether we're pacifists or not, the fact remains that Russia attacked the United States, attacked us right at the core, the centerpiece of our representative democracy here in this country. They attacked our elections, throwing into doubt the not only the efficacy, but the integrity of our vote. My God.
Yes. Yeah. And
the worst part is, Buzz, is they continue. They're continuing to do it. They're, in fact, improving. Andrea Chalupa said on my show last Wednesday, that get ready, because as soon as Russia unleashes its AI on American elections, then we've got a whole new playing field that we're going to have to deal with there.
See, and the groundwork has already been laid, as we talked about before. The chaos that Russia hoped to achieve had already been set in motion, remains in motion.
Right.
It has inertia. It continues to roll on without Russian assistance. I remember a report from earlier this year saying, the Russians aren't doing much this time.
Yeah.
Well, considering what they've already set into motion, what else is there for them to do?
They're all primed and ready to go. And remember, we've got two prongs of all of this happening at the same time. We've got the GRU hacking, and that continues. In fact, we've got stories along those lines coming up here on today's show. Plus, there's also the Internet Research Agency that, despite the indictments that Robert Mueller handed down against them, continue to operate. And in fact, the trolls continue to multiply and emerging, in fact, right after the Mueller report, on Twitter, perpetuating the Russiagate hoax meme, that whole idea. Like, it's still a hoax, and the trolls from Russia are spreading that all around social media, and like a bunch of fucking idiots, Americans are sucking it down like Coca-Cola. Like, I mean, if you think at this point we'd be able to distinguish between facts and propaganda, but
no. When it comes to our emotions, we're easily manipulated, and that's really all this is. And people need to be smarter about that. Clearly they do. But you know, there's already evidence that they're meddling. It's something that still hasn't been addressed, and not only has it not been addressed by the president, which is we've focused on because there's suspicion about him, reasonable suspicion about him. We can ask ourselves, why hasn't Congress done it? Why hasn't there's something about it in the thing that the Democrats passed, the H.R. 1 that they passed. There's a little something, but it hasn't been pursued and nothing's been followed up. Neither Democrats nor Republicans in neither the House nor the Senate have done anything to protect us against this ongoing attack. When it comes to that, there is guilty as the president.
While Congress, I think, has some responsibility in all this, and certainly the Republicans in the Senate, a significant amount of responsibility, it's really ultimately Donald Trump's constitutional mandate to deal with the national security of the United States.
He's supposed to be the leader.
We can say all kinds of supposed to about Donald Trump and that he's not fulfilling any of those things that he's supposed to do, because that, I guess, it just doesn't matter as long as he's owning the libs. That's the entire qualification. That's how we choose our presidents in this country. As long as they're owning the other side, well, then that's presidential and that's okay. And that's how twisted, that's how weird things have gotten.
Before I forget about it, a couple of things. You talked about the disinformation of the Russians. And one of the things the Republicans, just putting you all on notice now, in case you didn't already know, the Republican strategy is going to be to counter-program the House hearings, whether they're impeachment or otherwise, with Senate hearings on the investigation itself. And their starting point will be the Steele dossier. There are about a dozen things. Listen to this. There are about a dozen things in the Mueller report, about a dozen instances in the Mueller report where the Steele dossier was incorrect. The Republicans are going to run with that. Now, never mind the fact that the essential findings of the Mueller dossier were absolutely spot on. The listing of the many contacts between the Trump campaign and Russia. Steele was not wrong about those things. All of that stuff is true. What's not true necessarily is some of the salacious stuff. But anyway, Republicans are going to run with that, so just be prepared for that happening. The good news, and the other thing I wanted to say about there was some thought that Russian disinformation had made its way to Christopher Steele, that perhaps the items that were found to be incorrect in there, that were found to be outrageous, perhaps were fed to him by some of his sources were Russian connected.
Yep.
So, you know, these were raw notes that he had produced, not any conclusions that he had reached. So, and then the other thing I wanted to say about, because we were talking about, I think you touched on the fact that nobody's going to be moved by the Mueller report. Those of us who believe what we believe are going to keep believing that, and those who love Trump and are going to stand by him no matter what are going to hold their ground, except a poll out, the one that showed Trump's popularity dropping to 37%, matching his all-time personal worst. That same poll revealed the fact that of the people who felt they were genuinely familiar with the Mueller report, 15% of them said it changed their mind from thinking he was innocent to thinking he's not.
Interesting. And that's not surprising to me.
That's not a huge percentage, but it is for us. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
We'll take it. Oh, my gosh, that's 15%. If you get 15% off a box of eggs, then
yeah,
that's the title of the day's show, by the way, a box of eggs.
A box of eggs, but sounds good.
If you can get 15 cents off of that, well, of course you're going to go for that. Yeah. We'll take the 15% off the Trump supporters if the Mueller report has that. So when we say it doesn't have a lot of impact, that's mostly true. But we did pick up some.
Yeah. And you know what? All it requires is a few percentage points. Our elections these days are decided by 2-3 percentage points. I mean, basically every single one of our major national elections are somewhere within the margin of error. So if you get 50% of the people who are willing to be swayed on Donald Trump as far as his, you know, the guilt innocent question, then I think that's obviously a positive thing. And then you mentioned, too, the polling. In fact, Politico Morning Consult backed up the Reuters poll. Reuters had Trump at 37%.
And I think, cited, yes.
Yeah, Morning Consult has Trump at 39%. Both, I think the Reuters thing was somewhere in the range of minus 17, minus 16, and Morning Consult is minus 18. So that's actually a pretty big deal. And that shows that the range of people who I think are convincible with regard to turning their backs on Donald Trump. When you have a range of somewhere between, on average, 45, 44%, maybe, RCP has got him at an average of 43%. When you've got a range of 43% down to 37%, that means there's 6% of people right there who are willing to have their minds changed by the facts. And that seems to be happening.
Here's the thing about that RCP poll that has him at 43%.
Yeah.
Even it reflects, even though it's the gives him the higher number, the highest number of the three we've cited, even that number represents a 5% drop in Trump's popularity since the release of the Mueller report. This has hurt him, and he is behaving that way.
Yeah, I think he's going full whiny this week. Oh my God, the whining on Twitter.
Oh, I take it further. He's gone nuts.
Yeah,
he's
just gone
nuts.
Stop whining.
I'm just taking to asking him whether or not he has to change his pee pants a couple times a day. I've just reduced myself to going full ad hominem with Donald Trump. I don't know if there's any way else to deal with him or to deal with your own psychological coping mechanisms to have to cope with all of this shit. But you know, here's the other big takeaway I had, and I wrote a Salon piece out today about all of this, which is that it's becoming more and more clear, especially now with some of the evidence in the Mueller report, that, the Russian attack swayed enough people, convinced enough people to change their votes before they ever stepped into a voting booth in order to elect Donald Trump. I mean, for those of us who have been following along, I don't think this is any sort of breaking news, but there are countless Americans who are just now starting to reconnect with this entire story, and they may not be up to speed fully on some of the facts that show that, you know, the Russian attack was quite effective, and it hadn't been effective, I don't think Donald Trump would have been as interested in getting more of that information that we see detailed throughout, I believe, volume one of the report, which is absolutely and unbelievably harrowing. I mean, just when you get through the details of how Russia engaged in this attack throughout 2016 or going back to 2014, in fact.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get through all of that, and then you're confronted with all of the contacts between the Trump campaign and Russia and Russian operatives. And then that doesn't even include volume two, which is all the obstruction crap, which is even more harrowing than the previous two things. So
and that only represents a fraction of what we know. Remember, most of the counterintelligence stuff was handed off. It continues to be investigated. That's still very much alive. Mm-hmm. So although the report, even that part of the report, the collusion part of the report, that's heavily redacted, fairly, comparatively at least, even that part with its redactions and for all it reveals is really probably the tip of the iceberg of what the intelligence community and the FBI are investigating on that front. And the obstruction thing was just, you know, he was, Barr was BSing there, and everybody knows it, and that's going to be exposed. I think the hearings, it'll be the job of Democrats, in my opinion. It is the job of Democrats to, in these hearings, whether you call them impeachment hearings or investigative hearings, either way, they're going to be hearings. And in these hearings, I think it's their job to bring these things into focus in a way that the American people, this has been a muddled Mueller mess so far. And I'm not criticizing Mueller. I'm just saying, this is so complicated, and there's so much to it. The average person is just not gonna try to even digest all of this.
Yeah.
So we need some clear bottom line things that appear as they are to be simple, clear violations of the law, flagrant violations of the law, and to get those things out there, like I said, no matter what you call the hearing.
And I think one of the major ones, this is going back to my original major broad stroke takeaway from the Mueller report, which is that not only is Russia continuing to attack the United States, to invade our sovereignty, to screw with our elections, but Donald Trump, the commander-in-chief, is refusing to do a goddamn thing about it.
And all the suspicious behavior on his part, the secret meetings with Vladimir Putin, kicking out the interpreters, reporters and the note takers and the State Department personnel. You know, there's just a saying he believes Putin over U.S. intelligence. I mean, this is not normal stuff. This is this is very, very, very suspicious behavior. So, yeah, when you combine that with the rest of it, it's urgent and frightening.
Yeah, yeah. To me, that should be the first article of impeachment, the fact that the Donald right. Trump refuses to defend the United States against Russian aggression. Now, there's right. this other thing that I was mentioning earlier that I want to get back into just briefly here, which is whether or not Russia influenced the outcome of the election. And there obviously has been numerous studies where they haven't been able to determine whether or not Russia actually changed any votes on Election Day or once the polls opened in early voting as well. And it's right. my theory that all the votes that were changed in the form of people changing their minds before yes. they ever stepped into the voting booth. Because that was absolutely. The, I mean, that was the whole point, wasn't it, Buzz? The psyop of all of this was the point. It was psychological warfare for Americans to change their mind and to allow this horse into the hospital. I mean, that was the ultimate goal of it. And shocking, it actually worked. I mean, amazing how people are influenced by this thing called social media. Who knew that this would be influential?
It did work. And, you know, I blame the bastards at Facebook for the recent terror attack that killed over 300 people.
Yeah.
But I think we should make it clear, at least for myself, I'm speaking, that that was a factor. It was a big factor.
Yeah.
I do believe that Russian interference had an effect on the election outcome.
Yep.
I also believe there were other factors.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I believe that from the beginning, and I don't want to ever lose sight of that fact.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not debate whether it was the factor. Let's debate whether it was a factor. I believe it is, and I think that can be evidenced. I think the numbers exist to prove that.
And that's a fair way to approach this. Obviously, there were things on the ground that helped to swing the election, too. But I think this was a major prong of that momentum that shifted from delivering the election to Hillary Clinton to ultimately delivering it to Donald Trump. And one of the things that we know, and going back to Facebook here, is that in the report, Mueller notes that Facebook told investigators that the reach of the Russian propaganda was anywhere from 29 million people to 126 million people. This is on page 26.
Yeah.
I mean, many of the IRA's tweets, the Internet Research Agency's tweets. And by the way, if you're trolling me on Twitter saying, the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, what? Go to fucking hell. That's all I have to say about that. But the IRA's tweets and statuses were retweeted and shared by Trump and his campaign.
Yeah.
Even including Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump, remember Tennessee GOP, those accounts. I mean, Mueller goes through the list of all of the top shelf Russian troll accounts on Twitter and all of the times that Trump campaign people, including Donald Trump himself, either replied to or retweeted that propaganda. So,
and it's hard. It's hard. I just want to say it's hard for Americans to admit that they were gullible. Mm-hmm. And for all I know, maybe I was duped at one point. Maybe I, you know, before I got wiser, retweeted something that, you know, that was actually put there by them to stir up trouble.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like something I'd do, but I'm just saying it could have been any of us, and not necessarily because we're stupid, although, you know, we could improve our educational system. But
yeah,
I think that you know, nobody wants to admit that. So this is a very hard pill for people to swallow. But yeah, the influence was definitely there. And like I said, I think it can be documented in with vote counts and with accounts from Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God, absolutely. And, you know, here's the thing, though. There are millions of Americans who still get all of their news from Facebook. They're deeply influenced by what they see on Facebook. And you know what? That's okay. If that's how you get your news, fine. But make sure that you're not getting your news from some guy on the internet. That's like my thing. Like, if I hear someone say, oh, my God, did you hear this news story? Is this a legitimate news story, or is this some guy on the internet who heard
something? Look at the link. Yeah, look at the link. I'll give you a tip, but look for a couple of things.
Yeah.
You know, you see on the, it usually comes with a little picture and a headline, and then a very tiny little gray letters. Mm-hmm. It'll say what the source of that article is.
Right.
So that's the first thing. Have I ever heard of these people? Mm-hmm. Or if I have heard of these people, do I have an opinion about their veracity? And you know, so those things. Also, look for the word opinion. somewhere on the article, because a lot of sometimes I get posts from argumentative people who say, no, here's proof. Here's proof that such and so happened. And right there at the top of the page, it says opinion, because it's from the opinion section of a newspaper or website. And so, and opinions are fine, I guess. But make sure you're dealing in fact, not opinion, and that it comes from a reliable news source. And it's really easy to do. And I think my other advice would be try not to get swept up in the emotion. You may see a meme that reflects the anger that you feel at any given moment, or the humor that you see at any given moment. Think twice. I think a lot of people already do for their careers and their reputations, but think twice before you like it or share it or retweet it. And again, examine the source. I think those are some pretty good tips for sort of protecting yourself from that sort of thing, which continues to this day.
Well, I mean, the other thing, too, that we can look at as far as whether or not Russia swung the election for Donald Trump, or ultimately was one of the major factors that handed Donald Trump the election, is this is one of the most shocking sections of the entire Mueller report. And it gets into the battleground states and the communications between Paul Manafort, convicted felon Paul Manafort, and Konstantin Kalimnik, his man in Kiev, his fixer in Ukraine, who's got connections, obviously, to the Russian GRU, Russian military intelligence, as well as Vladimir Putin himself and Oleg Deripaska. So we see on page, somewhere around page 40, 140 of the Mueller report, that investigators described the following scene from August 2nd, 2016, in a meeting with Paul Manafort and Konstantin Kalimnik. In this meeting, per the testimony of Rick Gates, Manafort briefed Kalimnik on the state. I'm reading now directly from the Mueller report. Manafort briefed Kalimnik on the state of the Trump campaign and Manafort's plan to win the election. That briefing encompassed the campaign's messaging and its internal polling data. Let me emphasize internal polling data here. This is not what you see from Gallup or Quinnipiac or Real Clear Politics or Nate Silver even. This is hardcore proprietary information.
It's an analysis of the voters themselves.
Exactly. Targeted at the places where the campaign thinks that they should be targeting, and they determine whether or not there are precincts ripe for the picking and so on. So this is very focused, very laser-focused polling data. So Manafort is sharing this with Kalimnik and therefore eventually Oleg Deripaska in order to make up for the fact that Manafort owes Deripaska millions of dollars. But then the report goes on to say, according to Deputy Campaign Chairman Rick Gates, it also included discussion of battleground states, which Manafort identified as Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Minnesota.
And it,
those three states.
And if you're an investigating committee, that's where you start. That's where you begin, I think, to get the analysis I spoke of you know, how the votes went, the number of tweets, and the number of Facebook posts, and that kind of thing, to make that kind of connection. I don't think it would be terribly hard to do. No. I want to, before we get too far away from it, because we kind of zipped past it there. You opened this section with a proposal for a first article of impeachment.
Yes.
Against Trump. Would you mind repeating that again? Because I want to address that in a very supportive way.
Okay. I think the first article of impeachment should be against Donald Trump for failing to protect the United States against an attack against our sovereignty and against our representative democracy, against our elections.
Perfect. That's that. Now, here's the thing. You probably already know. Everybody needs to know this.
Okay.
Almost anything can be an article of impeachment.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a high crime or misdemeanor. You certainly can impeach for that, and there is no legal definition of high crime.
Yep.
It is left to Congress to determine what that is, and I think the one Bob just outlined is a pretty good one.
That's a pretty damn good one, I think,
Just a brief snippet, if I may, from the Washington Post.
Okay.
The House has also impeached presidents for behavior that undermines the constitutional system or that brings shame to the office of the president of whether that behavior, regardless of whether that behavior was criminal. For instance, President Andrew Johnson, who was the first president to be impeached, was charged with firing one of his cabinet members in defiance of a law that said he needed the Senate's permission to do that. He was also charged with, in essence, insulting Congress. One article of impeachment. Here's why anything can be an article of impeachment. And I think Bob's got the best one so far. Here's why anything can be an article of impeachment. One article against Andrew Johnson was scandalous harangues about legislators made with a loud voice.
I love that one. Harangues. Now, we need to get Trump on harangues.
Who do we know? Who do we know who throws out scandalous harangues about lawmakers with a loud voice?
Who could it be? I don't know.
Trump is crazy.
That guy right there. Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, one of the articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon was that Richard Nixon lied to the American people about his involvement in Watergate. That was one of the articles.
In addition to obstruction of justice, which is illegal. Yes.
Yeah. So back to Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin here.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Trump, well, that's okay. I mean, this is an important point to be made. Trump won the entire trifecta, those three states, by less than 1% of the popular votes. Right. A 10,000-vote margin in Michigan, 22,000 votes in Wisconsin, about 44,000 in Pennsylvania. Around 51,000 previous Bernie Sanders supporters, supporters of Senator Sandwiches, voted for Trump in Wisconsin. About 47,000 Sanders voters went for Trump in Michigan, and a whopping 116,000 more Sanders voters voted for Donald Trump in Pennsylvania. We have
the numbers.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very clear. And then if you combine Jill Stein's numbers in those states, Hillary Clinton, you take all those votes out and you put those votes in Hillary Clinton's category, or at least half of them, take half of them and put them in Hillary Clinton's column. Hillary Clinton is president of the United States today, not Donald Trump. And we've avoided this entire goddamn crisis and all of the awfulness that's gone along with it, right? So, yeah. I mean, that's Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And we know now that Paul Manafort and Konstantin Kilimnik were figuring out how to win those states. And then you factor into that equation the idea that Russia, the Russian GRU, had in its possession targeted DNC voter data so they could actually dig down to individual voters and influence them with social media through the internet research agencies, propaganda, and so on. So they could get down to the minute level, the most laser focused level in those three states. And hence we see a bunch of Obama supporters somehow suddenly completely crazy and voting for Donald Trump in 2016 and on down the line. Jill Stein's voters, et cetera.
Yeah, and this backs up kind of what we already knew. I mean, but it's now we have some numbers, and the confirmation from the Mueller report helps a great deal.
Yeah.
We kind of already knew these things. In fact, there's a lot in the Mueller report that we pretty much already knew, and it's important to have the confirmation. We learned a lot from it. We learned also, one of the biggest things we learned from the Mueller report is there's more to be learned. and it does, actually, and maybe not necessarily a bad thing, although we were hoping for more sooner. It leaves behind more questions than it's answered, which is certainly going to give Congress something to do.
That is also true. And there's one more prong of all of this that's detailed in the Mueller report that I want to talk about here. But my priority right now, Buzz, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, is now that we're almost into May, my priority is really staying cool in this goddamn swamp that is the Washington, D.C. area. My main concern is all of this mung that's building up in the air here in the D.C. Metroplex. In a few weeks, it's going to be a sticky mess outside, the hazy heat and humidity for the next, I don't know, 4 months. I mean, you used to live up here,
Buzz.
That's how I remember it. Yeah.
D.C. is a wonderful place.
Yes.
And I met some wonderful people there. But here's what I remember about the weather. Imagine a sheet of construction paper, light gray in color, draped over the city, and then this oppressive humidity in the summer, and of course cold and snow in the winter.
Right.
But I don't remember a lot of sunshine.
Yeah.
It was cloudy, and in the summer, cloudy and hot.
Right. Well, the problem is also it stays warm like that. It stays muggy and mungy in the air all through the night, too. So, I mean, now's the time. time to really have one of your hollow pillows lined up on your bed so you can have a cool night's sleep. It can stay as cool as the other side of the pillow, as they say at Hollow Pillow. Yeah. Hollow Pillow not only stays cool while giving my head, neck, and shoulders perfect support all night long, night after night, but it also can breathe and stay cool. Most importantly, conforming perfectly to the shape of your noggin, your neck, and your shoulders for a truly restful night's sleep, even when it's blazingly hot outside in the middle of the night. Hollow Pillows are filled with natural buckwheat hulls that are eco-friendly. They don't give off gases and they don't collapse. The buckwheat's grown and milled by American farmers before the hulls go into Hollow's pre-shrunken, certified, organic, unbleached cotton twill casing, all right here in the U.S. of A. And you can adjust the fullness of the Hollow Pillow by removing or adding more hulls through the zipper that's covered for comfort so you're not scraping your face in the middle of the night on the zipper from your pillow. Thank God. You know, I'm so happy with mine, Buzz. I'm proud to give it my personal endorsement. I'm proud that a percentage of the profits are donated to the Nature Conservancy. Hollow Pillows available in three sizes right now, small, standard, and king. And depending on the size, you can save up to $20 on each additional pillow with fast free shipping. But you can only get that deal by going to hollowpillow.com/BOBC. That's hollowpillow.com/BOBC. Say hello to a healthy and restful night's sleep. Wake up as cool as the other side of the pillow. Thank you for supporting this brilliant company and this show. It's hollowpillow.com/BOBC. Again, that's hollowpillow.com/BOBC. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
This is a band called Cloud Party. The song is called Black Rock Mountain. It's from the Praying for Rain album. This is one of my old friends from Reading, Pennsylvania, Jim Spies. In fact, it's funny story. The connection between me and Jim is not only did I write about him when I was writing a local music column for the Reading Eagle in Reading, Pennsylvania, back in the 90s, but when I went away and started doing work on the internet, when I left traditional media and started writing on the internet, Jim Spies took over my local music column in the Reading Eagle. So there's the rest of the story. Thank you, Paul Harvey. So, yeah, again, I'm going to add the link in the description below for iTunes. You can find Cloud Party at cloudpartymusic.com. All right.
I call conflict of interest on that, then.
A little bit. Yeah, but, you know, we didn't work there at the same time. I mean, he kind of just took over for me after the fact.
We didn't hear a lot because you were telling us about him, but he reminded me, his voice, maybe a younger John Hyatt a little bit.
Yeah, and you know what?
That just struck me that way.
On some of the songs, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. Jim Spies sounds a little bit like the lead singer of Monster Magnet, if you remember Monster Magnet from the
90s. I do not. Yeah. I do not.
Okay, sure. We'll take my word for it. Getting back to things here, there was a third aspect of whether or not Russia altered the outcome of the election that I wanted to mention. Yeah. And this is in the Mueller report, shockingly. Again, I can't underscore enough how just desperately shocking this entire report is. According to Volume 1, Part 3, Section C, those of you following along in your hymnals, page 50, Mueller's team described how the GRU, Russian military intelligence, targeted, quote, individuals and entities involved in the administration of elections. More specifically, we're talking about the networks and databases tasked with managing votes and voters. The Russians also targeted, quote, private technology firms who created election-related tech, such as voter registration software and electronic polling stations. Again, this is not some report in the fake news media. This is in the Mueller report. In July of 2016, in fact, the GRU scanned networks in more than two dozen states. This is confirming some of the reports we heard maybe about a year ago. It also, right, quote, gained access to a database containing information on millions. Again, I'm quoting directly from the Mueller report. Gained access to a database containing information on millions of registered voters, right, in the state of Illinois. The attack against the Illinois Board of Elections is just one of many, according to the report. Additionally, just before Election Day, the GRU targeted Florida officials.
Thank you, Florida.
And were able to access election networks there, according to the FBI. I'm sure you remember too, Buzz, that former Senator Bill Nelson said Russia had infiltrated Florida last August, right before the midterms.
He did. Yeah. Right before he was voted out of office by Republicans who didn't want to hear that.
That's right. And knowing that Russia was in there in the election systems in Florida in 2018 is maybe a possible explanation for that.
Oh, that's huge, because Florida is just purple enough and is a crucial, is a key state, is a swing state.
Yep.
I think they got into Texas also. Again, this part of the report confirms a lot of what we already knew, but it does expand the list of things into which the Russians got their fingers, and it's a reminder that those systems are still susceptible. You look at the companies that supply the voting machines, for example, that were mentioned there, and the monopolies they have, and the difficulty in making any changes. So many people calling for paper ballots and other techniques that are not hackable. We are still susceptible as we coast toward 2020. Mm-hmm. And I was just talking last night about this, that humans are, whether we're talking about individuals, we're talking about society as a whole, we are reactionary.
Yeah.
We fix things after they break. We don't fix things before they break. We don't fix things to make sure that they don't break.
Yeah.
We don't take preventive safety measures in our personal lives, and again, some we do, but so much we don't. As individuals and as a society, we wait, and even in this society currently, even a mass shooting isn't enough to move the needle. But we do, if we're going to act at all, it's after something really horrible has happened instead of acting to prevent it.
Well, see also the climate crisis. I mean, there's another great example of how we don't react until it's broken. And then what we do is we say, hey, you know what? Instead of green energy, how about sand berms and seawalls and hurricane-proof construction? Why don't we do that instead? That is a big, fat mistake. That is a non-starter. Don't even fucking think about it, for God's sake.
Build a wall. You know what we need to do? Build a wall.
And build a wall. I think
build a damn wall so that when the oceans rise, we got it covered.
Right. So going back to, I mean, this infiltration into the actual voting systems here, you know, it's difficult to know whether the hackers were successful and whether they actually changed votes, because really all you got to do is just either delete voter registrations or do
the changes. That's how.
Yeah, exactly. The changes would be imperceptible based on where the changes would take place.
Absolutely.
So it's difficult to say whether or not they were successful, but you know what else? It's also difficult to say whether or not the hackers were unsuccessful, all right, which is a very key aspect of this equation. So we know.
True, but
we
even if it weren't true, if this part didn't work, even if they got no further than maybe deleting a few registrants, I'm with you. I don't think it had the kind of impact that they had on changing people's minds.
Yeah.
I think that if they changed any votes by removing registrants or whatever, it pales in comparison to the number of minds they changed through social media.
Yeah. Well, in my Salon article, I draw this metaphor. You know, if a burglar breaks into a house, either the burglar is casing the place for a future intrusion, or the burglar plans to steal something while he or she is there. So if you apply that idea to the Russian attack, neither option is good news for American democracy, because either they're casing our election systems for a rollout at some point in the future, let's say the 2020 election, or they actually were able to change some votes along the way, or it's a lot of both. They're casing the place and they changed some votes. So take your pick. Any one of those options, minus they didn't do anything, is just really, really awful news for American democracy. And quite honestly, this is one of the reasons why I think this attitude that you're hearing from people like Congressman Cleaver, Sean Patrick Maloney, Bernie Sandwiches, that, oh, look, you know, let's just wait until the 2020 election and then we'll sort things out. We'll figure, you know, we'll hold Donald Trump accountable just by voting him out of office. Are you serious? The same Mueller report, are we reading the same documentation where it says that Russia attacked our election and they're planning to do it again to help Donald Trump? I mean, we're going to leave everything exclusively up to an election that might very well be corrupted, and that is our solution for Donald Trump? I don't think so.
Perhaps the most urgent move should be to take steps against that Russian attack.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe we start there. Listen, I have read, I think, just about everything there is to be read, both pro and con, on impeachment. And I have to tell you, it's close.
Yeah.
I have to tell you that there are some really good arguments on both sides of this. And I listen, here, I'm a Libra. I'm not a big believer in astrology, but I think the sort of monthly descriptions of personality are surprisingly accurate most of the time. They are in my case. I weigh everything. It's the scales, you know, the Libra. And,
yeah.
And so I'm constantly weighing pros and cons. And because of this, I sometimes have trouble making decisions. But I'm having a little trouble with this one, although I do have a definite leaning. I think we should proceed. But I think everybody needs to realize that the arguments for and against launching impeachment hearings that we're going to call impeachment hearings – the argument is very, very close. I have a proposal. This subject is very, as I said, very deep and very wide and very muddy, thanks to Trump and the Republicans. But I think the answer is simply this: it doesn't matter what we call the hearings. The hearings are going to be conducted either way.
Yeah.
It would be possible to still take it, but you know, and you read things that say, it's too early to start this. We need to hold the hearings first. I hear other people say, Seth Moulton, running for president now, said last night, it's too late. If we were going to do this, I think we need to be careful right now, but if we're going to do that, I mean, he still favored it, but he said, if we're going to do this, we should have started this a year ago.
Yeah.
And then you get the people who say, no, we shouldn't do it, and the people who say, yes, we should, and it's too early, it's too late, and they all have, you know, really interesting arguments for this. I think the solution is simply for us to recognize that so long as we hold hearings, so long as we hold the president accountable, we can decide to impeach at any moment.
Yeah.
You know, so again, I think I ascribe to the theory. Here's what I'm saying to everyone, and I would hope that a thing like this would unite us. It won't, but I would hope that it would. Let's have the hearings and just not call them impeachment. Don't talk about Fight Club. I think there's a way to achieve this. And then, you know, the other thing I've heard, and I've given thought to this as well, oh, my gosh, people are not going to sit still for they're tired of this. They're not going to sit still through impeachment hearings. This is going to hurt the Democrats. What do you think is going to happen if the Democrats hold 18 months of investigative hearings instead of an impeachment? Yep. Is that going to go better? To me, I think, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. Let's have the hearings. Yeah, let's have, you know, the kind of hearings we'd have if we're actually impeaching them.
Yep.
And then have the impeachment. Let's all realize that the impeachment, really, the hearings have already begun.
Mm-hmm. And exactly. And you know what? They may continue through the actual election itself. And Donald Trump may end up losing that election, and that's fine. And of course, we'll take that. The problem is that if we rely exclusively on that, we're relying on an election that may very well be corrupt based on everything that we know from the Mueller report, all of the reporting that we've seen. We know that they're doing it again. Now, you know, Paul Begala is another one. Paul Begala, who was on who's regularly on CNN, he's another one saying, you know what, let's just wait for 2020. You know why? Because we're going to lose. Well, you know what? We're going into a highly contested Democratic primary situation. And if the Democrats are going to move forward now with a message that says to anything that's tough, oh, we're going to lose. We're going to lose this fight. So why even bother? Why even bother treating this president unlike any other president?
I'm not hearing that. Yeah. I'm not hearing that exactly. I'm hearing that there's a risk of losing 2020. It certainly happened to the Republicans in the case of their impeachment of Bill Clinton. They paid for that politically.
I don't know about that either.
And the president they were trying to remove still left office with a high approval rating. Not that this one will.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what happened in 1998 was in that midterm, the House remained exactly the same. And the Democrats, I take that back. The Senate remained exactly the same. The Democrats gained 5 seats in the House. That was the extent of, the public punishment for the impeachment process. And then, as we know, George W. Bush ended up, quote unquote, winning in 2000, and the Republicans took back the Senate in 2002. So ultimately, there was no long-term damage to the Republican Party, except for the fact that Newt Gingrich was ousted as Speaker. That was the only thing that came came out of the midterms. And I guess for damn good reason along those lines. But I mean, as far as, you know, the Democrats taking a risk with the 2020 election by pursuing impeachment, pursuing continued investigations, I don't know if there's any real ramifications along those lines. I do think that in the modern context, I think that American voters admire politicians who own their positions, who don't apologize for what they believe in, and who push forward in a way in which they're not making, you know, any equivocations about whether or not they should be doing X, Y, or Z. You say, you know what? I'm for this, and this is what I am for. So you can either take it or you can leave it, but the fact is that this is how I think we should proceed, and thank God there are people like Elizabeth Warren who are proceeding along those lines. Now,
yeah, before anybody attacks me for what I said a moment ago, let me also say I don't think we can afford to wait 2 years. I don't think the country can afford the risk of what can happen. You've seen what this guy could do in a week. We're going to let that go for two more years. Now, I heard Joe Lockhart, a former White House press secretary, wrote in the Washington Post that, you know, but if we wait 2 years, it'll not only Trump will not only get reelected, you know, that this fight will actually make him stronger, that if we impeach him in the House and we fail in the Senate, this will only embolden him and make him stronger. And he's saying that, you know, we don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
He's saying if you leave him in office for two more years, it'll completely destroy the Republican Party that's attached itself to it. Well, that's fine, Joe. Yeah. I mean, you were maybe looking at it from a political standpoint, but can the country survive? They just sit on its hands for 2 years. No, we can't do that.
No.
That's why I really like my idea, naturally, of having the hearings and not calling them impeachment hearings.
I think it's a great idea. I think that's a really phenomenal and smart idea. And I think that's the way this is actually going to proceed. In fact, I think that's what Nancy Pelosi is kind of waiting for. That's what Democratic leadership wants.
Yeah. Read between the lines here, folks. We're not having an impeachment. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
We're having hearings.
Right. And bear in mind, too, that Adam Schiff is getting all of that counterintelligence information like any fucking day now. So,
right. Yeah. He's investigating. The FBI is investigating. Counterintelligence community is investigating. Adam Schiff and his committee are investigating that counterintelligence side that Mueller did not touch. Likewise, the financial crimes are still being investigated by the Southern District of New York and many others. Those things that Mueller didn't address are still being pursued. Mueller, that was outside his purview. His job was to see if any federal felonies had been committed, and he was very laser-focused on that, very tunnel-visioned on working on that and only that, and perhaps for a very good legal reason. We can hopefully rest assured that those things have not been forgotten, that Manafort's sharing of information with Kilimnik is not forgotten. And even though the Mueller report found no evidence, no provable evidence of actual conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia, that doesn't mean there wasn't one. That doesn't mean that won't still be proven by this ongoing counterintelligence investigation, which now gets a little power boost from the congressional hearings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just because there wasn't some sort of handshake and a contract and all the rest of it doesn't mean that there wasn't some sort of unspoken wink and a nudge when it came to Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. So let's bear in mind that, too.
Yeah. I said last week the Mueller report revealed that the Trump campaign never actually got into bed with Russia.
Yeah.
But that there was heavy petting.
That's perfect. That's a great way to put it. Yeah. You know, one thing I want to leave you with before we take a short break, I want to come back and talk about Rudy Giuliani here in just a second.
All right.
Before I leave you with that, I want to talk about just growing a backbone and to replay this clip from Deval Patrick from, I believe this was from the 2012 Democratic National Convention. It may have been 2008. I'm not sure which one, but Deval Patrick, who's the former Massachusetts governor, had something to say about Democrats growing a backbone. And I think this is important to remind ourselves of as not only as we enter into the thick of this primary season, but also as we talk about the idea of impeaching Donald Trump.
And if we want to win elections in November and keep our country moving forward, if we want to earn the privilege to lead, my message is this. It's time for Democrats to grow a backbone and stand up for what we believe.
Couldn't agree more. Deval Patrick. Absolutely, 100%. I put a 100 emoji next to that one.
We could absolutely use more of that. And I don't mean to soft pedal this, but we want to distinguish ourselves from Donald Trump in that we want to have a backbone, which we could use a stronger one.
Yeah.
But unlike Trump, we want to do it wisely. We want to build that on solid ground. I have debated for a couple of weeks now about whether to tell this little parable. It's like a little humorous parable, not really a joke. It's a little humorous parable. And it's outdated and it's inappropriate in the Me Too era. But I'm gonna tell it anyway I'll tell you why, because it makes a very, very important point.
Let me see if I can find some music for you, because I think I know what story this is.
I kind of do.
I just need
and
some appropriate
other people
music.
May know it too. You know, it's been around for a while, but I think it's very, very appropriate when I see exceedingly angry people on the left. And again, you have a right to be angry, but when I see that, I think of this little parable.
Okay, here we go. I got some old-timey music for you, because I know where you're going.
Two bulls are standing on a hill, admiring a herd of cows below. The younger bull says to the older bull, I'm going to clean this up. The younger bull says to the older bull, let's run down the hill and have our way with those cows. And the older bull says, let's walk down the hill and have our way with them all.
See, now I thought, before the show, you told me a story about W.C. Fields, and that is
No, but you know what? This is a quote unquote joke that a farmer might tell. But it makes it very important. And I apologize. I wanted to let you know that I knew in advance that this is not an appropriate thing to say normally, and that I gave it much debate before I ever said it publicly. But I think I do it this one time because I think it makes an important point when I see the anger and the rush. Some of the folks some of the younger lawmakers in Congress, some of the progressives, I think this energy is much needed, and we do need a backbone. I totally, totally agree. But let's do it. Let's not be stupid. Let's not go stumbling in. Let's make sure we know what we're doing. Let's do it right.
Yep.
Let's not screw it up like Trump. And so let's walk down the hill.
Sounds great.
And do this right. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect bit of advice there. And I think that's the way, that's the only way this can happen. They have to stay as on the level as possible as they pursue this politically treacherous territory. Admittedly, it is treacherous to pursue impeachment, especially against someone who's as frenetic and unpredictable as Donald Trump. But it's something I think that needs to be done. You cannot treat this guy as if he's just any first-term president. He is not just any first-term president.
No.
He is a danger to American democracy. He is an autocrat in waiting, and he can't wait to get to election 2020, where either he can undermine the outcome of the election by undermining the integrity of it, by blaming the Democrats for doing something that Russia is actually doing in benefit of Donald Trump. It's going to be this whole upside down Orwellian bit of goddamn autocratic madness. And
he's a mean and stupid man.
Exactly. That's exactly what I meant to say, except I used too many words for it. All right. One last break. Back with more show after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius. Doing our part to make the world a better place one bathtub at a time. That's bubblegenius.com.
Bob Seska.
Oh, I love this. This is a Sky Seeker, a song called Chance Passenger. It's post-rock alt soul. That's where they go. Facebook.com/Sky Seeker Music. It is maybe the first prog band. I consider this to be kind of prog-ish, I think. First prog band we've had submitted to the indie music lineup here on the show.
It's definitely the absinthe.
Yeah. A little bit. BobZeska.com/music if you want to submit.
They have great absinthe in Prague. Listen, I'm still blown away consistently by the quality week after week after week of the new music that's coming in. Yeah. It's just it's hard for me to wrap my head around how well done it is, how well produced it is, and just the fact that this creativity just keeps coming. It gives me hope, because I always had this theory. There are only 8 notes, and therefore, mathematically, only so many things you could do with them.
So cynical.
But, and yet, yes, that's me. But people keep getting it done, and I'm very impressed. That was good stuff. I could lay back in a beanbag chair and listen to that, if you know what I mean.
That's exactly right. You know what, too? We've got the Indie Music Countdown coming up on Sunday. I believe it's going to drop on Sunday. So it's all the music played in order as they appeared on the show. All of the music that we've played here for the past month of April, and I'm going to play that. Full-length songs, lots of fun 80s DJ jingles and things like that, just like last time.
That's very Casey Kasem of you, by the way.
Yeah, and that's, I love doing that. I love just stretching my DJ wings every once in a while.
But I worry about you, because I see you, you're landing new domain names and picking up new ideas for shows. Bob, you can only do so many shows. I'm
that's
sorry.
True, I know.
You are not Ryan Seacrest. You must be stopped at some point.
I must be stopped. That's a great way to put it. Please, someone stop me, because, you know, here's the problem. I go to the gym, and I'm sitting at the gym. And by the way, I don't like to talk about going to the gym a lot, because it makes me sound like a douchebag. But I like to go to the gym. And this past couple of weeks, I've been listening to my iTunes 80s mix, where I made this whole playlist, hundreds of 80s, my favorite 80s songs.
Love it. I love it.
And I'm listening to all that music, and I got this great idea. I said, you know what? You know what I would love to do? And it's something that Kimberly and I have talked about extensively on the After Party. Chez and I used to talk about it on the show. Jen Kirkman is really into discussing this topic, and that is Generation X. My generation, Kimberly's generation, Jen Kirkman's generation. And I said, you know what we should do? Is we should do a podcast series that's all about Gen X things.
You did say that.
Yeah, I did say that. And then so I got back from the gym, and I said, you know what I got to do? I got to register the domain name, The Gen X Podcast. Well, first, it was available, so that's great news. And there's also no Gen X podcast right now. There's an opening in the marketplace for something like that. Thank God.
I don't know where you get the energy. I'll have what you're having.
Well, my God, talk about an add water and serve kind of podcast topic. I mean, we can take a year from the Gen X period of time and discuss what was happening in that year and how that was influential on my generation and so on. We could get into all kinds of other things, whether it's politics, pop culture, everything that has to do with Gen X, memories and analysis and all kinds of fun stuff. And why?
I'm just saying podcasting is your cruel mistress. You love her too much.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Either I'll keep doing it, or I'll get bored and I'll stop doing it.
Just collapse from exhaustion at some point, don't you think? Good Lord, man. Where do you get it? I admire you. I think the music show is obviously it's great fun, and I know how much fun it is to do a thing like that.
And so I
got a little envy that you're doing that. I think that's very, very cool. And again, with this music, it's just amazing.
Well, I think the Indie Music Countdown, the possible geek culture podcast I'm going to be doing.
Right. Nerd.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God, you're not kidding. The other thing is this Gen X podcast. I think all of this will...
Nerd! Yeah, that's it.
A little late on the pickup there. but these things will also all be on the Realm Network. So I think I'll be presenting those.
We're very pleased and excited about that as our listeners, and that's great. Whatever you can do, we are grateful for.
Sounds good. Well, okay. I want to talk about Rudy Giuliani before we wrap up here. We're running late on time.
That's my fault always.
Why no? It's my God.
No,
are you kidding?
No, trust me. I know it's definitely my fault.
it's your fault. I'm blaming Buzzo.
Buzz.
It's his fault.
That's right.
So Rudy Giuliani said this today, and this is not nearly triggering the outrage that it ought to trigger. He said, there's nothing wrong with taking information from the Russians.
Yeah.
And that's, he said that, I think it was on, George Stephanopoulos. Doesn't matter. But he said this. He said, there was nothing wrong with taking information from the Russians. Yeah, there is. And I'll tell you why. They were attacking us. They are at war with us. That'd be like Rudy Giuliani saying, hey, there's nothing wrong with taking information to help our campaign from, Al-Qaeda. You know, there's nothing wrong with taking stolen information from the Nazis in World War II. Maybe FDR should have taken intelligence from the Nazis to help him win re-election.
I'm going to start accepting help from the Flat Earth Society for my newscast.
There you go. I mean, this is the most unbelievable display of traitorous behavior from the Republican Party and from the guy who practically branded the idea of patriotism in the post 9/11 world. I mean, my God, that 2004 election was nothing but waving the flag and tormenting John Kerry. I mean, all they did, the Republican Party from September 11, 2001, all the way through the Bush administration, and quite frankly, continuing through today, every time you hear Donald Trump play that goddamn awful Lee Greenwood song. I mean, they claim to be so utterly synonymous with American patriotism, and yet here is really Rudy Giuliani saying, hey, look, what's wrong with taking information from the Russians while they're literally at war with us? I mean, my God. I mean, what else does it take? I mean, the only conclusion that you can draw by this, as you observe all of Donald Trump's red hats continuing to follow him, continuing to follow Rudy Giuliani, continuing to follow the entire movement, is that they are the victims of a mass delusion where they are just so. And this includes, obviously, Buzz, members of our families. You know, I mean, these are people who have been massively deceived by one of the most insidious and pervasive psychological operations in the history of the world. It's got to be
sadly, the reason we did not hear more outrage, as you began there by saying, is because it has become too normal.
Yeah.
A terrifying thought if you linger on it. This is all the more reason that this behavior has to be punished, that this president has to be held accountable. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. Although Trump supporters are listening, I think Rudy's credibility is suffering. I would think even
that's
I would
an
think,
understatement.
I'm thinking specifically about the Fox viewer, the Trump voter. See. As they view Giuliani. And I think even among them, they realize he said some stupid, stupid things. And this is Trump, Trump's panic reaction after people began to realize what the Mueller report actually said. Trump went into a Twitter tailspin and immediately shoved Rudy out the front door after keeping him under a rock for the last several months.
Literally.
Shoves Rudy out the front door to do the TV tour where Rudy once again has an opportunity to say stupid things like there's nothing wrong with taking help from Russians, which actually just further indicts the president, and to go on to say, I think we should have a trial so we can prove him innocent. Well, this is his lawyer, ladies and gentlemen. This is his lawyer. As Don McGahn might say, yes, but I'm a real lawyer.
It's despicable.
Yes, it is despicable, Rudy.
It is despicable. I think that, like I said, that's all the more reason that this has to be punished.
Yeah.
Because Trump supporters, with some exceptions because of Rudy's crumbling credibility, will believe what he has to say or at least adopt it. Whereas those of us over here on the reality side of things will ignore it as we always have. Again, like I said, underscoring the need to punish this behavior.
You know, I got a music submission the other day from an indie music recording artist named Rudy's Crumbling Credibility. It was an amazing bit of music.
Sign that band.
I'm going to. You're going to be on the show next week. Okay, we got a big postmortem show coming to you next on our Patreon page, BobSeskaShow.com. All you got to do is go there, sign up, and you can listen to all kinds of bonus content, including the postmortem show, which happens right after this music is done playing. Buzz and I just keep on talking and talking and talking, probably for another 15 minutes or so, 15, 20 minutes, depending on what we have to talk about. And then that goes on our Patreon page. You can listen to it there twice a week, Tuesday and Thursday. Also, you can hear on our Patreon page the after party on Fridays with Kimberly Johnson. And don't forget Buzz Burbank News and Comment every Thursday. BuzzBurbank.com, RealmNetwork.com. It's the best hour of news that you can hear all week. Meanwhile, if you want to go back to the Buzz Burbank News and Comment archives, you can hear Buzz's special report on the Mueller report from Friday, wasn't it?
It's right on top. Yeah, can't miss it.
Yeah, so go listen to that and make sure to support all of your favorite podcasts, right? Jody Hamilton. Let's see, Stephanie Miller. Let's see who else. Dino Bladala, John Fugelsang, Frangela, Rude Pundit, all at the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network, sexyliberal.com. And I'm just trying to see if I'm forgetting anybody on that list. Let's see. I just did a review.
I'm sure you did, but we'll get them next week.
Yeah. Jody's from the bunker. Stephanie's Happy Hour. Randy Rhodes After Hours. Dean Obidala's I Want to Be Your Muslim Friend. Sanity with John Fugelsang coming soon. Final Word with Frangela. Yeah. And the great Rude Pundit. And many more to come. That's coming up on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network.
Wow.
Okay. That's it. Postmortem show's coming up next. We'll see you over there, folks. Bye-bye.